Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrne, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrne Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed. One Sunday morning, I opened my newspaper, and there on the front page, dead center and very large, was a photograph of an 18-year-old kid playing the drums with what I can only describe as a 1,000-megawatt smile. And my immediate response was that the article was going to be about his expertise as a musician and maybe that he had gotten a big contract or something like that. But that wasn't the case. The picture went with an article about a new educational program in my local school district. As more and more kids are finding it difficult to learn using the standard teaching protocols, different programs are being tried. And that made me think about a discussion that I had with a group of friends several years ago. We had all independently come to the conclusion that had we not learned how to read at home before we went to school, we probably would not have succeeded nearly as well in school as we did. And how did we learn to read at home? Well, our parents and or our siblings read to us. And then, of course, since little kids want to do what grown-ups do, then we wanted to learn how to read too. And you learn for this simple joy of learning or to show off to your bigger sister or to please your parents. But when you get into school, all that changes. The system in school is pretty much you're doing it for the grade, reward or punishment. And the idea that the learning system itself isn't brain-friendly for an individual child never enters the picture. If the child can't perform in that system, there are some stock responses. One is that the child isn't trying hard enough. That's when you get those D's or F's for effort when you're a little kid. If it's obvious to the teacher that you're not a dullard, why then you must not be learning because you don't care, or you're challenging authority, you're a troublemaker. But whatever it is, the kids get branded. Over the years, you may have noticed that more and more kids are being labeled, more and more kids are on drugs. Teachers are spending more and more of their time doing things that have nothing to do with teaching. So along came these alternative programs. I was delighted to see this one starting up in the high school and that its success has been proven. What I'd really like to see are programs like this starting in preschool, so that the program is designed to meet the child's needs instead of the child being crammed into an existing program and then labeled based on their ability to succeed or not in that program. And of course, it seems to me we should be doing the same thing with animals too. Why we would think that a one-size-fits-all teaching strategy, reward or punishment, would fit all animals is beyond me. What's even more interesting to me is how many people who use such programs admit that they didn't like school themselves. They didn't like learning for grades. They don't like to be graded. They don't want to be graded because they know the grades aren't true. And when they don't get good grades, they get frustrated and they get angry. And they don't like feeling stupid. And they don't like other people saying they're stupid based on a grade. And yet, we do it to animals, especially dogs. We do it to dogs all the time, don't we? The only difference is we're not allowed to euthanize kids if they can't learn using the teaching program that's most convenient or practical for us. And because we can't just euthanize them, and because these kids who are disabled by a teaching method, more so than their own brains, wind up getting into trouble, we have to do something about it. We can't hang on to the illusion that the teaching method is perfect. It's the student who has the problem. Will we ever reach that point with dogs and other animals? I like to think so. I like to think we'll start doing screening instead of taking a one-size-fits-all approach. That the shyer, more timid pups get put into classes with other puppies of the same temperament. And that those off-the-wall fireballs who have trouble focusing are kept out. They stay home. They stay home until they can learn a little bit more self-control. Now, wouldn't that be something? If you're part of the training community at all, I'm sure you can hear the howls of protestation loud and clear on that one about all the horrible, horrible things that would happen to a pup if that pup wasn't immediately plunged in the puppy class ASAP because it's so critical. And it is for some of them. But for others, it could very well be the worst thing that we could possibly do.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Catova Arts, www.catova.com.